You're listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast, recorded from the Everest Rohr Chapel Fine Arts Center in Mishawaka, Indiana. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's so much different being on this side of the stage. And the lights are bright, so I can't see you guys, so that's probably a good thing. I'd like to show a couple pictures here before I get started. I am a very visual person, and I know that Sean had put together a nice video. Kudos to the video. That was a great video. With some pictures of my family in it. My two older boys, Nick and Jack, were in the video, and that's who we are going to be talking about today. This first picture, I always tell everybody every time I go to talk, that it's probably one of the most special pictures that I have. This picture, which you guys are probably getting ready for spring break every year. We always went somewhere for spring break because we're from South Bend, Indiana, and we usually did not see the sunshine for a good 3 months. So we would go to the same location, Siesta Key Beach. My boys were creatures of habits, which meant that we always stayed in the same condo, the same place, the same beach. So I took advantage of that, being a mother of four boys, not always having the opportunity to schedule and plan pictures, family pictures. I used this opportunity to get our family pictures taken. So this picture that you see right here was actually the last picture that we had taken as a family of six. Before poor choices were made. This next picture here that I want to show you is what our family looked like. At the same beach, the same condo, the same everything, just we're a family of four after poor choices were made. And I show that picture every single time that I talk because I want people to see that your actions have not only affects you, but it also affects your families. But the pictures that you just saw in that video were pictures of our two older boys, actually all four of my boys, but my two older boys in specific, Nick and Jack. Nick was 19 years old, and Jack had just turned 18 a few weeks before. They were both pronounced dead on June 14th, 2015. After attending graduation parties with friends. Their cause of death was acute alcohol and an oxycodone ingestion. They were kids, just like most of you, who had dreams and aspirations in life. Nick was 19 and had just finished his freshman year at Indiana University. Jack had just turned 18, and he had just graduated from Penn High School. Like I said, they were teenagers, just like most of you here who have dreams and aspirations in life. However, theirs ended with one bad choice. I remember June 14th. It was a Sunday morning for me. Being a mother of four, I used the weekends a lot to catch up on household chores. I remember that morning and specifically, I had been working on a paper that I had due. I was in the midst of my master's program here at Bethel University over in the nursing department. I'd been working on that paper most of the morning. I decided to put it away and start doing some chores. Laundry was my chore of choice that day. I was walking around the rooms, picking up laundry. I remember specifically walking into Jack's room. And as a mother, and if there are parents here, you'll know what I mean when I say parents, sometimes we just like to sit and watch our kids sleep. They're peaceful. And I remember that day I walked into his room and he was laying in bed, and I was watching him sleep. or it's what I thought I was doing. I thought I was watching him sleep. And I remember thinking he looked like an angel sleeping. Little did I know the prophecy that thought would hold for me that day. I was walking around his room. "Hey, Jack, it's time to get up and get moving. Dad has stuff he wants you and Nick to help him with today." He continued to sleep. "Hey, Jack, I'm serious. Today's not going to be one of those days where you sleep till noon." He continued to sleep. I walked over to his bed and really started taking a closer look. I shook him. He continued to sleep. And that's when panic mode set in. Being a nurse, I knew how to feel for a pulse. I didn't feel one. And I remember thinking, "It's just your mind playing tricks on you, Becky, come on." I shook him and I did the sternal rub, and anybody here in nursing school will know what that is. So you rub them on the middle of their chest and usually you can bring about a response. No response. I remember thinking, "What is going on in my house?" I panicked. I ran downstairs to go grab my cell phone and called 911. I ran back upstairs and I was talking to the 911 operator, and she's trying to tell me how to do CPR. And I remember thinking, "I know how to do CPR, just please get here and help." In the meantime, I picked up Jack out of his bed and I laid him on the floor next to his bed and initiated CPR. I remember in the midst of all that, I was screaming for my other son, Nick, who I knew was home because he had two friends that had spent the night with him and they were down in the basement. I remember calling and calling and calling for Nick, and Nick never came. I cannot even begin to describe the numbness that starts to take over you. It's one of the worst feelings I've ever felt in my life. The second worst feeling was after the paramedics arrived and had worked on Jack for a while. Seeing one of those paramedics get up and leave the resuscitation attempts on Jack. I remember I was screaming at him, "Where are you going? Why are you leaving him?" And then slowly I remember those pleas, that screaming turned into pleas. I was begging him, "Please don't give up on Jack. Please, please don't leave Jack. Jack's a fighter." Because I knew that once they gave up on Jack, that meant he was gone. I remember he had left upstairs, walked downstairs, and into my basement. Eventually he came out of my basement, and I remember him asking for a coroner. And I remember thinking, "What? A coroner? What is going on in my house?" There was a police officer with me most of that day. He was following me, walking around, trying to keep me calm. Because as you can imagine, you just can't even imagine. You can't even start to process what's going on. Needless to say, I was a mess that morning. I'll admit that. I was a mess. But that paramedic, when he came out and asked for a coroner, I remember looking at that police officer and I said, "Did he just ask for a coroner?" And the look on his face told me the unthinkable. You see, my other son, Nick, had been sleeping in the basement with friends. And what I didn't know was that while I was upstairs, on a 911 call with Jack, performing CPR on Jack, and hollering for Nick to come help me, is that there was another 911 call that was made out of my basement. Nick's friends had heard me upstairs calling for help, and they went to awaken Nick. And when they did, they found Nick in the same condition Jack was. It's unthinkable to process the loss of one child, but two was just unbearable. I remember at some point that morning, I'd called my husband, who had been out of town with her other two kids. I told him that there was an emergency at home and he needed to get home quickly. My husband arrived home to a cul-de-sac full of lights, sirens, ambulances, police cars, you name it, it was there. And I remember seeing his face as I opened up the front door, barely able to get the words out, "They're gone," before my husband collapsed to the floor. You see, those were just unreal words in an unreal situation. The final worst feeling that day, though, was to tell my other two children. Justin was 15 and Matthew was 11. But to have to tell them that their older two brothers have died and are gone forever. The look of sorrow and heartbreak on their faces as the reality of that situation began to sink in is something that I will never forget, and something that they should never, ever have had to experience. What we now know is that Nick and Jack were at graduation parties where they were participating in underage drinking. And at some time during their time there, somebody produced a pill bottle, a bottle of prescription meds that didn't belong to them. And they decided to make the choice to experiment that night. Some people will say, well, you know what? They just weren't smart kids because of those choices they made that night. And I'd say that Nick had just finished his freshman year and was entering his sophomore year at Indiana University, where he was majoring in microbiology and chemistry. Yeah, he was a smart kid. He had graduated from high school with honors, where he was a student assistant in the guidance office. He had been accepted into every single college he had applied to. I think I lost count at like 11 on first attempt. Yeah, he was a smart kid. Nick had received academic awards in our community and also at the state level based on his academic achievements. Jack, he had just graduated from high school where he had also graduated with honors. He was also a student assistant in the guidance office. Jack had chose to go to Ball State University in the fall, where he was going to be majoring in business. Jack, too, had received academic awards at the state level and also here in our community based on his academic achievements. They were leaders, captains of sports teams they participated in. So I guess my point is this. These were kids, smart kids, with bright futures. How could these boys who had such bright futures and were so smart make such a poor choice that would ultimately cost them their life? My husband and I have racked our brains over the whys and the hows. Why would they do something like this? How could something like this be available to them? And why wouldn't they just say No. We may never know all the answers to those questions, but what we do know is that nobody is immune to making poor choices, especially when alcohol is involved. When alcohol is involved, your voice of reason is silenced and risk-taking behaviors take over. Nick and Jack are no longer here. Their dreams and their chance to make a difference in the lives of others while here on earth are no longer a reality. Close your eyes for just 1 second. Imagine your mom or dad in my shoes that morning. Imagine your brothers, sisters, cousins, friends, neighbors, and Justin and Matthew's shoes that day, finding out that their loved ones had passed away. Imagine their pain, their horror, and their disbelief. It's awful. We used to think that something like this could not ever happen to our family. We were involved with our kids, and we loved our kids very, very much. We talked to our kids, and we did a lot of things as a family together. But what we learned is that no family is immune to poor choices, especially when it comes to prescription drug medication, misuse, and abuse. Think about all that Nick and Jack lost as well. All their hopes, their dreams, their family and friends, and ultimately their lives related to poor choices. However, all of you are still able to live the lives that you would like and live the dreams that you would like. You are all able to decide which path you choose to be on. You are all able still to define who you are and who you want to be. Be a leader who others will want to follow. And do not succumb to peer pressure. If you could feel for only a brief moment the extreme pain and anguish that our family feels every second of every day over the loss of Nick and Jack, then you would understand what drug experimentation could do to your family. It's a fact, which is really sad, these facts. I had to look at this to find out so I can remember right. Last year, over the last 12 months, over 100,000 people have died here in the United States of America from some type of overdose. That is a lot of people dying. To put that number into perspective, that number is equivalent to about 270 Boeing 747 jet airplanes crashing in our country every year. That's about one airplane crash every day, every other day. If we had that happening, an airplane crashing about every other day in our country, don't you think we'd have people saying, what can we do? We've got to get these airplanes to stop crashing. Well, we've got to get these people to stop dying from overdoses. There are no barriers to drug abuse and drug misuse. Everybody can. And unfortunately, according to the statistics I just said, just quoted, will be affected at some point in your life, either directly or indirectly, by somebody who is misusing a medication or a drug of some sort. I encourage all of you to try to get involved at some level. You guys all have a voice. A lot of people ask me, how do I do what I do? My first answer is by the grace of God. I truly could not be standing here in front of you or to the other thousands of people that I've spoken to about the loss of my two beautiful sons if it weren't for the grace of God. But I have a voice now, and a voice to speak about Nick and Jack and what happened to them so that other lives can be saved. You guys have a voice that can be used to save lives by starting conversations, by getting involved, by helping somebody who maybe has drug use in their world right now. We started getting involved in our community probably about 6 years ago. About a year after Nick and Jack passed away, actually, the first time I spoke publicly was at a community town hall that was hosted in the Bethel Nursing Department auditorium. After that, I started getting calls from different local high schools. Can you please come and talk to our students about what happened to Nick and Jack? I started getting calls from CNN, Fox News, Megyn Kelly Today Show, the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, just how can we all use your story and your voice to make a difference in this world? We started getting involved with the DEA at their local take-back events. And when I say the power of one is significant, this story will help show you that. I was a mom. But a mom on a mission and a mom with a voice. I called our local sheriff's department. I said, I want to get involved. What can I do? I want to participate in drug take back days, which is where people come and they dispose of their medications. So it was me and a group of friends. We hosted the first one where people could drive through, drop off their medications, and they would be disposed of. I think we collected around 220 maybe pounds of pills. We did it again 6 months later, and again 6 months later, and again 6 months later, so on and so on. Our last DEA drug take back day, we collected over 12,462 pounds of pills. That's just here in our local area in a 4-hour window. We had over 25 locations that our foundation organized, and we had volunteers at each one. So to say that one person can make a difference, it can, because when you start talking, you have allies. Other people join the cause. I'd like to encourage you guys to use your voices to get involved, whether it's at a local take-back event, whether it's cleaning out your medicine cabinets at home, or whether it's sharing Nick and Jack's story with somebody that you love in the hopes that it can make a difference in their lives. Thank you very much for hosting me today.
Thanks for listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast. Subscribe to the podcast and get more information at chapel.betheluniversity.edu or check us out on the iTunes Store by searching for Bethel University Chapel.